Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, Patrick Van Straten, your host. And this week I'm joined by Chris Hamill. Hello, Chris.
Hello, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And Joe Tomlinson, how are you?
Yeah, much happier now. Manchester United finally got a win, mate.
Yeah, and a very good win as well. But we're going to talk this week about some teams at the wrong end of the table, though Man United might come back in there. We're going to be talking about the relegation battle, because everyone's been so fixated on the mess at the top of the league that we haven't really talked that much about the teams struggling at the bottom, and they really are struggling. I mean, there are some historically bad performances. So currently, there are five teams in the league yet to get 10 points. Brighton, Fulham, West Brom, Burnley and Sheffield United propping up the table. I don't quite know what to make of this, because some teams, obviously, who we kind of predicted doom for before the season, or said we were worried about, like Newcastle and Palace, seem to be doing okay. Sheffield United and Burnley, who I think we would have all been fairly positive about, have just absolutely tumbled. And Chris, you and I have particularly been very positive about Brighton. So if you were to pick one of these teams who you think is not actually in danger of getting relegated, would it be the Seagulls?
Absolutely. Graham Potter is doing a fantastic job. I think they're unlucky to be in this company right now. Expected points, which can feel a little bit arbitrary. We sort of always caveat it with that, don't we? Has them down as the fifth best club in the league so far. So that is sort of decided by the quality of chances they're creating versus the quality of chances they're conceding, right? That might be overstating it a little bit. But impressive definitely. Performances against Chelsea, against Man United, definitely can't be overlooked. They've been a little bit overshadowed, let's say, by pretty miserable draws against West Brom and Palace. Although drawing to Palace, they went down to 10 men, didn't they? And drawing to a Roy Hodgson side is no shame in that. And what's followed that? Losses to Everton and Spurs, right? I mean, worryingly, they are only averaging about 0.89 XG per game. So not exactly free scoring at the moment, even though the football is pretty free flowing. But that should be better now that Morpay is back. I do think Brighton can upgrade that forward department, not with relative ease, but I do think they can probably go and sign someone in January that's going to be at least rivaling Morpay for a starting berth in that side. Because you look at the numbers people are putting up other than the Frenchmen, and sort of Connolly's only got one, Trossard's only got one. You match that against their expected goals, and I think it's only Trossard that's really underperforming somewhat. He should maybe have a couple. Of course, very unlucky against Manchester United when he hit the crossbar, the post, the beans on toast, every which way. Defensively, though, continue to impress me. They've been really solid. So I think it's only Spurs and Chelsea that have allowed less expected goals per game. And they're also conceding the fewest shots. This is a really impressive statistic. Only 7.1 shots conceded per game, given the start of the season they had as well. That sounds better with context, doesn't it? Only Athletic Club in Europe's top five leagues are conceding less on their goal. So the fact they're entertaining, the fact they're defensively solid, all bodes well. It's just lacking that cut above up front. And I really like Morpay's industry. And he is quite predatory. I don't mind him in the box. But there's been some glaring misses. There's been some poor link-up play. There's been some times where Lamptey and co. have sort of, and Solly March have got in really good positions, cutting the ball back. No one really there. My only major concern is that forward department. But I do think that they'll improve with time, given they're such a young outfit. Bissouma, Alzate is obviously converting from a fullback to a central midfield at the moment. Lamptey's, I mean, everyone's talking about him like the next big thing, but he's really yet to get a meaningful amount of minutes under his belt. He's going to improve with each game. Morpay's still young. Ben White looks absolutely sensational, whether that's in at CDM or at centre back, and he looks like his Brighton career already has a bit of a shelf life on it. If I was a big club, I'd be monitoring him like a freaking hawk. He just passes in between the lines with consummate ease. It's absolutely ridiculous, some of the passes that he's firing off. But ultimately, Patrice, I just think there's 5, 6, possibly even 7 worse teams than Brighton. And if they were to finish even 11th, 12th, that'd be a great campaign. And I expect the likes of Newcastle to finish well below them, despite them being in a healthier place right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, I agree what you're saying in the forward line, though I do think Trossard and Mbappe are like very good forwards for them to have. And actually, Danny Welbeck had a good game for them at the weekend. I think he had 4 shots.
Couldn't finish a packet of crisps, though. My word, some of the misses.
Yeah, but you don't really have him in the side just for that, do you? Like, I mean, Danny Welbeck is by no means a clinical forward, but he's extremely hardworking. He's a good physical presence. He's an intelligent passer. And that is something they could probably do with.
I've got to confess, I've missed the last couple of games. So you'd have to tell me how well Welbs has settled in, because it's either clashed with a time when I'm editing or watching Celtic. So I have missed the last couple of games, which is still why maybe I'm a little bit more buoyant than some Seagulls fans.
Yeah, well, he's only got about 100 minutes so far, Welbeck. So, I mean, it is very early days, and we'd expect him inevitably at this point to sit out a stretch of the season with injury. But given that they managed to keep decent defensive numbers earlier in the season with Lallana playing in central midfield and then put up decent attacking numbers in a game they should have won against Burnley, I think, you know, with Welbeck returning from a long time out in attack, I thought, yeah, you know what? Like, this is just Graham Potter, like, coaching a good side. That is what it is. And even if you argue that expected goals isn't entirely capturing how good or how bad Brighton are, which I don't really see the argument for. I think, you know, the eye test in the Chelsea and Man United games matched up exactly with what the numbers said. You'd still expect that they're at worst a mid-table side. And it's not like they're miles adrift. Like, if they were rock bottom, then maybe we'd be talking about it. But they're on 6 points. They're the best off of these 5 sides we're going to look at. And it feels like, you know, 2-3 weeks and maybe they'll be like happily mid-table, especially as you're seeing clubs like Newcastle are like 5 points ahead. You can make up that difference, you know, in the space of a week. So I agree with you. I'm pretty positive about Brighton. And like you said, there's so much upside in the talent that they're getting on the field. Whereas that can't be said of some of these other teams. So, Joe, I'm going to ask you kind of the opposite question. Of all these sides, which is the team that you would put your life savings on getting relegated? Because I know who it is, and I think we're going to agree.
I mean, I would never put my life savings on anyone getting relegated, but I think the standout from the pack remains West Bromwich Albion. I think we said at the start of the season, feeling a little bit sorry for Bilic and the West Brom fans, to be honest with you, because they've sort of entered a gunfight with a water pistol, haven't they? Not looking too sharp in any area. I think they were massively stitched up in the summer, to be totally honest. And it's not really any fault of the owner, because it's not like he had massive funds to invest anyway. But I think Luke Dowling, who's their sort of sporting director, was given £20 million budget, which in the Premier League is just a drop in the ocean, really. And he absolutely stretched every penny he could out of that £20 million plus that he ended up spending in the end. Obviously, bringing in the likes of Dean Garner and Pereira again, eventually getting Carlin Grant over the line, although I think he was Bilic's number one attacking target for quite some time, 18 months or so they've been tracking Carlin Grant. And the question kind of comes back to, yes, they're good signings. Obviously, Dean Garner and Mateus Pereira, sensational for them in the Championship. And I think Bilic's plan was really kind of get the old band back together for one last go, because they're set right. They probably shouldn't have been promoted. Like, it almost feels like it came 12 months too early in that sort of 2-year plan that the West Bromwich Albion board had, in that the squad's quite young. There were even some inexperienced players for the Championship that brought them up to the Premier League. So not being able to add Premier League proven quality to that squad, you're kind of looking at a Championship team really playing one division higher than they should be. And that's exactly the results that you're seeing. Not overly happy with Bilic's tactics either, though, has to be said. I really don't like the switch to the back three that he's tried to employ at the start of this season, like a back five without the ball. I think that defensive nature has kind of rung through the team and everybody's a bit like quite dull, quite defensive, not really good enough to be here. The forward line are struggling, look quite isolated. Have been impressed by some of the players, obviously Pereira and Dean Garner, but also Conor Gallagher, I think, looks like a really nice, tidy little central midfielder. So yeah, I personally don't think Bilic is going to last this season. I said on We Need to Talk, I'd be surprised to see him still manager of West Brom after the international break, because I felt like they would lose to Tottenham, and they did lose to Tottenham, although it didn't get battered by Tottenham, let's have it right. They probably deserved a point out of that game against Tottenham. Tottenham just about getting the job done, as they have done in recent weeks against teams like Burnley as well. But again, it just felt like they're short. You know, even though they probably should have drawn the game, it just felt like they were short of what was needed to get a point and the 3 points in that one. So I feel a bit sorry for Bilic. He's probably been stitched up a bit. Obviously, stuff like the Ghazi deal behind the scenes, the owner's coming to him and saying, look, what's your opinion on Hegazi? Do you want to keep him? Do you want to sell him? He said he wants to keep him, and they still ended up selling him, or loaning him, I should say. It's obviously a bit of a stitch-up. You can see why Bilic wouldn't be happy, but it kind of does make business sense to some regard too. So it's almost a perfect storm, you know, not much money, a manager who feels like he hasn't had the backing, not great performances tactically on the pitch, not the biggest fan of his team selection. So I'm afraid to say, West Brom fans, I think it probably will be a one season hit in the Premier League this year. But, you know, it probably came 12 months too early anyway, so they won't be too disappointed. And I think every West Brom fan going into this season was already accepting the fact that they're probably going to spend 1 year here because they didn't have the finances or the squad structure to keep them up. So fair play to West Brom for being here. I think it's probably time to give somebody else a go, though, that's not Slaven Bilic, even though we're only 7 weeks into the season, or 8 weeks.
I mean, it's hard to disagree with you on anything you've said there, though it would feel a little bit harsh to sack Bilic because he did overperform with them in the Championship. And you wonder if maybe their attitude will be a little bit like Norwich's last year. Like, we came up, we didn't have the money to strengthen. What we can do is build a team which will be good enough to win the Championship again. And in Grant, in Dean Garner, in Pereira, in guys like Dara O'Shea, like, it feels like they've got the talent there to do that. I mean, just a few things to consider. They did have a really tough start to the season. So they had Leicester, Everton, Chelsea, Southampton, their first four, though their last few fixtures, Spurs aside, have been pretty winnable. You know, they've had Burnley in there and they've had Fulham in there.
But the loss to Fulham was huge. The loss to Fulham was absolutely huge. In Bilic's future, I think.
And being comfortably second best as well. It wasn't like the Spurs one even, where it was like, oh, we kept it tight. But that's my worry in a way. Like, there are these sides where they can, when they're like conceding a bunch of goals, quite often you see them shut up shop in the next game and everyone works to defend and they put in an okay defensive performance, which I suppose you could argue they did against Spurs, but they can't open it up and score, and they just can't do both things at once. And I mean, the numbers so far, like Pereira, I think, is on like 0.15 expected goals and assists per 90. Dion Garner's on like 0.09. Like, these are, as a team, they get 9 shots a game. Like, Dion Garner and West Brom as a whole are like Aubameyang and Arsenal. That's how bad they are right now.
And there was arguments from West Brom fans, and you can see why. And I think maybe even Bilic to some extent too, although he obviously wanted Pereira and Dion Garner to come back in, is that it might have been a better idea to invest in some fresh fullbacks, maybe a Premier League level defensive midfielder rather than Jake Livermore, over signing both of these players that obviously progressed throughout the Championship and were so good on loan. Would it have been a better idea to spend that money in solidifying the back line a little bit?
I think that's an interesting point, because when you come up with a side like Leeds, who are prepared to spend £96 million even in a coronavirus hit landscape, right, all of a sudden it's, how do we, like, they will probably survive. So there's another team that we're not going to be competing with at the very bottom of the table. They're giving themselves a disproportionate boost. You say West Brom only spent 20 million, but
that was the budget. They outspent that in the end, but that was the budget.
But so did Brighton. And Brighton signed people like Veltman for 900k. They've still got some unknown entities to come into the side, like Zakiri.
Brighton were in a better position in that they already had a Premier League ready squad, and people that were joining that team, i.e. Veltman, were already joining a team of a higher calibre than the current West Brom squad are at. So I feel like West Brom are at a lower, much lower base level than Brighton.
There's truth in both of those perspectives, right? Like, yes, Brighton's squad, we've been praising their squad building for a couple of seasons now, and it clearly was in a much, much better situation and young and ready to get better. But Chris is right. Clearly there is a value in the market, and like blowing all your money on Carl and Grant and Dion Garner, I don't have an issue with that because I rate both players, but it's not necessarily like the most sensible
exactly.
thing to do.
Is Dion Garner good value for £15 million? Yes. Is he good value if your budget is only £20 million at £15 million? Perhaps not.
Yeah.
I mean, I do, though, on the other hand, like Joe, you were saying, like, I generally think that getting in a really quality defensive midfielder would probably be one of my first purchases if I were a team, you know, getting promoted from the Championship. But there's also the part of me that feels like, less so with defensive midfielders, but when we're talking about centre-backs and things particularly, and even full-backs, our ways of assessing them are not as reliable as our ways of assessing forwards. Like, so, you know, even the eye test and expected goals and shot numbers and stuff, those are quite reliable with forwards. Mm. Like, they're much more reliable than defensive numbers, which are really system dependent. And even then, you know, like, we say this all the time on the show, you know, when we have to, like, suggest a centre-back for a club, we're like, if you don't watch, like, 50 games of a centre-back, it's really hard to know how good they are. And so there's the part of me that if I was like, I have limited money, I'd think, you know what, I can go for some players, for some forward players who I'm like 85% sure are really good. Or I can go for some defenders who I'm like 55% sure are good. Hmm. And I'd be tempted to spend that money in attack as a result, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, because we don't have metrics for what doesn't happen in defence, yes. right? We don't have yes. metrics for, oh, I marked 300 people per 90, thus shut off this passing lane, thus I'm really good at marshalling the space in the back four. Mm. And I do have sympathy for Bilic in the sense that you look at even some sound defensive options in the Championship who put up good numbers, like good baseline numbers. Like you said, it is harder to contextualise them in a defensive point of view. But Joe Rodon, Matty Cash, costing £15 million apiece. Even then, he can't go to the Championship, which he knows, and take the best defensive talent from there. So he has straddled a much harder or thinner line, I guess, than some other managers that have come up.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's almost an impossible job with the talent they have.
Agreed.
So I have two more questions here. The first one is, if they do sack Bilic, who do they go for? Because the one thing I'm thinking is, actually, there's some decent managerial talent out there. Like Allardyce is available. There's Marcelino. He's available. Like, these are guys who you think would get a team playing sensible.
Oh, what a culture clash. Marcelino at West Brom, mate. Quality.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, he's just a good defensive coach. He's going to play 4-4-2. I'm pretty certain West Brom are going to be like, yeah, we know 4-4-2. Like, we could do that. What do we reckon?
It's a very difficult one.
Is it all Aladice all the way?
I mean, when was the last time Aladice managed? It must have been like
Palace
3 years ago, 4 years ago now.
He was caretaker. He was caretaker at Everton a while ago.
Yeah, I think it might be Crystal Palace, but I could be wrong.
I think it's a really difficult one.
Roy took over from from De Boer, right? I think it would have been. I think it would have been Everton.
Everton, Sunderland. Who was the last team he saved? Don't know.
Everton.
I don't. Like, obviously, I'm not sure I would be the biggest fan of Allardyce if I was a West Brom manager. But I actually don't know. I couldn't tell you a name. I'm really not sure. But what I am sure is, I just don't think it's going to be Bilic is the guy who's here come the end of the season.
Yeah, probably somewhat harshly as well.
Yeah, I feel a bit bad for him.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, let's just go to a word from our sponsors then before we move on, because actually, if you're a West Brom fan, you may want a drink right now, and Beer 52 are going to help you out with that. Beer 52, obviously you've heard us talk about them before. What they are is a beer subscription club. So You sign up for a subscription with them and each month they send you a crate of 8 beers. And normally these are themed from like a different country. They've got 150,000 members. And it's a really good way of discovering new beers, really highly rated beers from all over the world. So at the moment, like you can get a German beer from Dortmund, the Edel Spezialbier Dortmunder Lager. There you go. And you can get one from Croatia and you can get one from West Yorkshire. So you're always going to be getting new things. If you don't like dark beer, there's an option that you can tick so that you only get light beers as well. You get a copy of beer magazine Ferment if you're like a super beer nerd, and a little snack to enjoy with your beer in each crate. So you pay £5.95, which is the cost of postage, and your very first crate of 8 beers will be free. So that's about a £24 value there that you're getting for free. And if you find something you like, of course, you can go away and support that particular brewer. You can go and order more from them. And that's something we should all be doing right now with so many companies really struggling during coronavirus. If you don't particularly like the beers that are coming in, or if you're struggling to get through them, then you can pause. You can, of course, cancel your subscription anytime and start again at a later date. But if you are a beer fan, this might be something to get you through a very long winter that we have ahead of us. Beer 52, that's beer52.com/extra to claim your free case of 8 craft beers for just £5.95 postage. That's beer52.com/extra. Okay, well, before we leave the relegation battle behind, should we take a look at some of the other clubs in the mix here? Because definitely, nobody is safe, I think. I want us to talk about Fulham. Because unlike West Brom, I think they're... Yeah, they are Bush. There is something to dream on, though, in Fulham. Like, they do have some players I like. I think Mitro is still pretty good. I think his expected goal numbers are pretty solid. And obviously, he's just like a big unit who gets shots. Adamola Lookman, despite a failed Panenka,
Oh, my God. That's embarrassing.
That is how Panenkas go. Like, if they don't come off, you look like the biggest in the world.
You cannot do a Panenka representing Fulham in a game where you need a point.
Yeah, at 1-0 down, it's not wise. But when you look at, when you watch Lookman, there's clearly a player there.
Yes.
I mean, I think he's got 3 shots, 2 key passes a game, 4 dribbles, and they're really reliant on dribbling. Like, when I was looking at their numbers, I was just like, Jesus, please let me find something that Fulham do. Because the attack is awful, the defence is terrible. Though Liverpool have conceded more goals and so have Leeds. And it's that they're really, really reliant on dribbling. They complete more dribbles than any other team in the league. They complete 15 a game, which to me is a bit of a sign that maybe you don't have a system that allows you to pass up the field. But weirdly,
I think that's a bit harsh. I think that's quite harsh. Okay. I actually think like Scott Parker's system is actually quite solid. I actually think he knows what he wants from this Fulham team. And although we're only very early into the season, I think there's already very brief glimpses of improvement in this team.
Okay.
Especially against West Ham, I thought there was really prolonged spells where Fulham kept West Ham pinned in just with that passing game plan that Scott Parker wants to enact. And now we're starting to see slight signs of defensive solidity. They finally seem to have found a back four that might work. You know, Voliner, Anderson, Tosin, and then Anthony Robinson with Onguissa sat in front of them. That seems to be a little bit more solid. So I actually think he's found a game plan that might start to improve this team, finally.
I think I agree with both of you in a sense that it's been hard to identify quite like what his optimum lineup is, right? And Scott Parker's tried 5 different formations. And what that says to me is, obviously, there's a little bit of chaos in there, but he's also a pragmatist. Like, Scott Parker will, I think, adapt to the talent that's in his side, which hasn't necessarily happened at Fulham, I guess, in recent years, or they've gone from one extreme to another, right? But I do quite like this 4-2-3-1 as far as Fulham lineups go, lads.
Yeah, it's not a criticism of Parker when I say that they don't really... their system doesn't work, because, I mean, you can know what you want from your team and yet your team not be able to execute it. I mean, you could argue that's happened with excellent managers, like that happened with Pep in his early years at Man City. I mean, you could argue something similar might be happening with Arteta at Arsenal now. Like, I mean, managers can have plans that don't necessarily mesh with their players. But the positive thing about Fulham, which I think we kind of all agree on, is when you look at that squad, it's so broad and it's got so many different skill sets in it that there are probably five or six different ways that this Fulham side could feasibly set up and try to play. And you feel like at least one of them should be competent. And yeah, Lookman, Mitrovic, Onguissa, the young fullbacks, you know, there's enough.
Areola looks like an outstanding goalkeeper for a club of Fulham's level.
Mm. Yeah, and you kind of look at that and you think there's probably enough there to maybe, you know, to put together like a mid-table run. But the question is, how much of a hole are you in by that point?
Anguissa is going to be key. And I'm really glad that he's finally coming good, right? Because he didn't start the season. When he came on, he looked a bit susceptible in games. But since then, I think he's putting up around four defensive actions. And it's no secret that those centre-halves have needed protecting in Fulham's side. I know they've kind of swapped personnel. It's been like a wholesale change, hasn't there? And now it is Anderson and Adebayo, right? And I'd be lying if I said I knew how they were getting on. But Adebayo was great at Blackburn last season. Anderson, not so much at Lyon. But how do they look in their last game as a defensive unit then? Did anyone watch?
I've watched bits and bobs of it. But I would say, I mean, much more solid than at the start of the season when we were seeing the likes of Michael Hector playing back there.
And Dennis
Adoy, they do complement each other to an extent. But again, you know, Areola's digging them out of holes fairly consistently with some very good goalkeeping. I don't think they're ever going to be this squad like a mid-table team. It is still like a relegation sort of like 20th to 15th place squad. But it's just about getting, I think, for Scott Parker, he played such a consistent way in the Championship with that ball retention system. And we've spoken about on episodes in the past that when a ball retaining Championship side comes to the Premier League, they often struggle because they don't have the ability to retain the ball in the Premier League. So I think it's just about that adaption for Parker of saying, OK, we're not going to see as much of the ball this
season.
How do we change it?
Yeah, though that said, like, I looked at the numbers and Fulham are keeping the ball to a reasonable degree, but then just not that threatening with it. I think they've got something like 53% possession, which is pretty solid, but I think other sides are kind of happy to let them do it, knowing that they're not going to be especially, you know, difficult to defend against. Like, they are a marginally positive shot side. I think they take like 12.8 shots a game. They concede like 12.4. Now, the quality of these shots is different, but we're not seeing a side here where like teams are just running through them again and again and again and again. Like, that is the advantage of having these like young, particularly athletic fullbacks, of having a decent centre-back pairing, of having a ground eater like Onguissa in the midfield. You don't have that happening. I don't know, though. If you made me bet, I still think I'd put money on them to go down, just because I think I have more reason to be optimistic about some of these other sides. But I mean, it's not like if this side stays up, we would have to say this is one of the worst sides to stay up for quite some time on current form.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, but it's much closer than I thought it was going to be, given, you know, like I've watched the last couple of Burnley games and they've been okay. They're pretty solid against Tottenham, very uninspiring against Brighton, but I don't see where Burnley's goals come from. Like, I can potentially see Mitrovic clocking up 10 goals and Lookman chipping in here and there, but, you know, Wood and Barnes rapidly need to start scoring some goals for Burnley, because I think they've scored three goals this season. I think they've had five or six games already where they haven't scored.
Well, Burnley are concerning. I mean, like, they're the second worst team by expected points. I mean, and it's hard to see how they get better. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, Barnes and Wood last season contributing about five shots a game between them. That's gone down to about 3.7 this year, which is obviously a significant drop. And while they did have a horrible schedule at the start of the year, they had Chelsea, Leicester, Saints and Spurs. Their next few fixtures, their next six, I think they've got Palace up next, and then they've got City, Everton, Arsenal, Aston Villa and Wolves.
Tough. And do you know what? Like, they've obviously got players coming back. So Ashley Barnes spent the majority of the start of the season out with an injury, coming back to fitness now. Ben Mee, fantastic to see him back in the starting 11 for Sean Dyche against Brighton. So a few positives. But the summer was just so underwhelming. It was so problematic, you know, losing Jeff Hendrick to Newcastle, huge issue. Losing or failing to sign a lot of Sean Dyche's targets, ended up with Dale Stevens at 900k. Like, I was looking today, and based on the purchase value of every squad in the Premier League, Burnley's is lowest, £81 million squad. West Brom's is more expensive, 81.4. Fulham, 90 million. You know, Sheffield United, who I'm sure we're going to come on to, 115 million. Like, it feels now like that lack of investment in that first team squad is really starting to bite for Sean Dyche.
The sale of the club.
Which is sad, which is really, really sad.
Yeah, though, even if they did, like, sell the club and they had a bunch of money there, like, I'm not sure it's in Dyche's nature to go out and buy big on guys who are maybe at the beginning of their career. Like, my concern here is that what might be happening at Burnley is what we worried about happening at Crystal Palace, which is age has just suddenly bitten them, you know, because the entire squad is pretty much over 30. And at some point they are going to start to drop off there, you know, and teams like West Ham and Palace, who are the only teams in the Premier League with an older average age than Burnley, they've added some youngsters, or at least some younger players, over the last few windows. You know, we've seen Eberechiese, we've seen Bowen, we've seen Nathan Ferguson, we've seen Tyrick Mitchell, we've seen Saeed Benrahma, like, come into those squads. And so you can at least say there's a reason to believe these teams are going to get better over time. Whereas you look at this Burnley team and you're like, okay, if Dale Stevens isn't good enough to keep them up this year, and neither are Wood and Barnes, those guys are not going to be good enough to keep them up next year. And so what is their plan here, that Dwight McNeil turns into, like, Gareth Bale? Like, I don't see a real reason for optimism in anything about them, really. And
yeah.
I feel a bit sorry for them, because they clearly just don't have the resources to do much.
Yeah, I mean, I was just looking at some of their past performances this morning, and, you know, 2014, 2015, they didn't win any of their opening 10 games. And they ended up getting relegated that year. In 18-19, I found this one quite interesting, they didn't win any of their first five games and stayed in the division. So there is still reason to be fairly optimistic. You know, Ben Mee coming back, Ashley Barnes refining his fitness, are huge players for a team like Burnley. And if Sean Dyche can find a slightly adapted system that gets the best out of them, then you never know, they might stay in the division. I saw him on the weekend looking to kind of shift to a 4-3-3, and you saw Jay Rodriguez playing as part of a front three. I found that quite interesting. So you never know, and Ben Mee is such a massive player to have back for them, that they might turn it around. But historical form suggests they're on a huge problem area.
But I think I agree with Pat, in the sense that what you're saying there is that if he pivots the system, if he finds a way to squeeze more out of the talent that he's got, that might be okay. But I actually think he's very, very good at getting the most out of a limited talent with basic and pragmatic systems, right? But what Pat's saying is, if new owners come in, does he have that track record, that creativity in the transfer market? Is that expertise there at the club to go and get more bang for the buck and get a disproportionate amount of points in the second half of the season after January, say? Because, I mean, past transfers include, like, above 10 million, you know, when they've sanctioned big spend with Dyche, Robbie Brady, 13 million, Jeff Hendrick, 10, Chris Wood, pretty good at 15. Ben Gibson's not really materialised at 15, has a Vidra at 10, sent out on loan several times. Josh Brown, who was, of course, 9 mil last year. Jay Rodriguez, a successful return at 5 mil. So is form, I guess, when he's been given a meaningful amount of money to spend, not great, or not enough, maybe, to claw back at teams that are in their vicinity that have had great transfer windows?
And what I'll also say as well is this season's schedule is so unrelenting, it really will expose thin squads.
Yes.
There's going to be no breaks. There's no room to breathe if you have an injury. And that's what I worry about with a team like Burnley this season in particular, having such a thin squad.
And it's really hard as well for teams to, like, blood some youngsters. Like, you just kind of have got to chuck people in and hope that they kind of float at the moment. Like, I mean, I think we should move on to the final team, who are arguably in a slightly similar situation, though I think they've got a better squad, which is Sheffield United, who are bottom of the league. They've got 1 point from 8. They've scored 4, conceded 14. They're taking 8 shots a game. Only 4 teams across Europe take fewer. They allow 15 shots a game. This is really quite troubling. And I mean, but the prospect for them getting better, one, Chris Wilder. Two, we know this squad can play at a better level. We know it can. And there's no particular reason to think that your guys like Lundstrom and Fleck and Norwood are just going to fall off a cliff. There's no real reason to think that. Then they've got Sander Berger, who's been great, and Perdue, who looks promising, and Brewster, who could be good.
Just to interrupt you, like the names you're mentioning there, like Fleck, long-term injury, Lundstrom, probably leaving in January, Jack O'Connell, out for the entire season. Like the players that had significant effect on this Sheffield United team. I mean, effectively the whole left-hand side, really, with Jack O'Connell as that left centre-back on the verge of an England call-up, snaps his ACL. Mm. John Fleck, left-hand side of the midfield, injured, out for a significant portion of time. Lundstrom refuses to sign a contract, still playing. If he's not gonna be here in January, they can force him to stay in January, sure, but surely they're gonna cash in on that asset in January because they're not exactly a cash flush club. So even the names you're mentioning there that we don't think are gonna drop off, there's massive issues with. So I think Sheffield United are in huge trouble this season.
Yeah, true. I suppose the one positive though is that like none of those guys is like a world beating talent, like. It's not like, oh my God, this one player who we've got who makes our entire team tick has got injured and we're in serious trouble. You know, like you imagine that you could go and get players of the quality of those guys or close to for like not very much money. At least under Chris Wilder, they would be close to that quality.
Yeah, maybe. But Jack O'Connell, you know, is so vital to the system that I think replacing him with a player of his caliber, that player then has to learn this quite complex Sheffield United system of you know, overlapping centre backs that we spoke about last season at times. That is very, very difficult. Lundstrom's an incredibly effective player in this side. Him not wanting to be at the club anymore, I think, is quite a hammer blow to Chris Wilder. Losing Lys Mousset to a long term injury.
Yeah.
As much as, you know, he's not exactly. Like, he's not Timo Werner goal-scoring-wise. He is vital, again, to Chris Wilder. And it just feels like, again, a little bit like Burnley, maybe a slightly thin squad could be exposed by such a rigid schedule.
But unlike Burnley, I do think they've pivoted their transfers in a really positive way. And Sanderberg's quite emblematic of that, right? He was a kid that had a really big reputation, scouted extensively by even the big clubs. We heard Liverpool were really interested in him, didn't we? And they went and signed him for €24 million. And it was sort of a breakaway from what came before. And it was a mixture of sort of the player suiting Chris Wilder's profile, but then maybe also suiting a little evolution in that philosophy. Rian Brewster, obviously a positive capture at 26. Ramsdale, not so much. Not convinced by Burke at 6.5 as well. I thought Lowe and Bogle from Derby were really good. Really good value for, what, 7, 8 million? So I think they've bought smartly enough, or their talent identification is smart enough to salvage having a thin squad in January. Whereas I'm not sure Burnley are quite there. Like, I think on that point, Sheffield United have it together a little bit more. Which is, I'm trying to come up with a silver lining for Sheffield United fans, because it is horse shit at the moment, isn't it?
But there is huge pressure, isn't there, on like a youngster like Rian Brewster to score goals.
Yeah,
like
less than one shot per 90.
Massive pressure. And do I think this is the right environment for him to really thrive in a team that are going to be backed against the wall for 80% of the season, playing alongside either McBurnie or McGoldrick? I think real tough ask to ask Brewster to contribute more than 10 goals this season.
His body language against Chelsea was sort of emblematic of the culture shock he's going through right now. He was so annoyed to be dragged off, I think in part because he just wasn't in the game at all. Like I just said a second ago, averaging what, 0.8 shots a game, was it, Pat, or per 90? So he's got to kind of change his whole game. He prospered in a Swansea system that wherein they had all the possession, where he was taking free kicks, penalties, and he was the man, right? And now, in this workmanlike outfit, he's kind of got to be another cog in the machine. That's going to take 6 months to adapt to, surely.
Yeah, and it's just... I think they paid too much for him. Like, I think he might well be a good player, but when you were reeling off those transfers, Joe, I sort of realised that, like, even the ones that I like, they're all quite expensive. Like, I mean, Ramsdale's expensive, Brewster's expensive. Like, Berger's okay, but even that was quite expensive out of Belgium, right? Like, yeah. I don't know. They've spent quite a lot on these guys, and I feel like Brewster for 20 mil, like, is that a really good use of resources? Like, maybe you'd be better off, like, getting, like, paying for somebody a bit cheaper and then maybe trying some loans, because I do think that teams this season, the bigger sides, were probably willing to make some loans they wouldn't normally because of needing to cut costs with COVID. So I think, you know, if you'd gone to Arsenal and asked for like a Reece Nelson, he's going to cost you like nothing. It might be better to do that than pay 6 mil for Oliver Burke. Yeah. Like Chelsea, Man United, like these, it might be worth going to these clubs and saying, like, we'll take this guy off your hands, we'll pay his wages because he's on nothing, and we'll see how that pans out. I just think, like, that what they've done, they're the opposite of Burnley in that they haven't been risk averse at all. They've been perfectly willing to say, we rate this player, we're going to pay pretty much top dollar for him. And it might come back to bite them. I'm a little bit concerned.
Yeah, because for 10 million more, you could get Odson Edouard, right? Sorry, I'm just thinking from a Celtic
perspective. Yeah, or Ollie Watkins.
Yeah, I'm just 20. That's kind of just hit me. So I think most Celtic fans would be upset selling Edouard for anything less than 30, 35. But when you see Rhian Brewster go for 20, they're very justified.
Or you look at Brentford, you know, losing Ollie Watkins and then picking up Ivan Toney. You know, like these...
Yeah.
There are clubs who are able to turn over their forward lines in a reasonably sensible way. And I just, I feel a little bit concerned about how much money Sheffield is spending on guys. I really like Berger, but some of the other guys, I also like the fullbacks, but they might not be enough to keep them up this season.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? So the talent identification is better than Burnley, but not better than 12 or 13 clubs in the Premier League. And that's the sort of fine margins we're talking about here, isn't it? I think a Sheffield United, one team is going to be unlucky to go down. I think one team is going to be nailed on. Are we deciding now? Have we got through all the teams?
Just before we got to picking our teams to go down, I just wanted to know if you guys have got any other teams you'd like to throw into this who you think are in significant danger. Because I think Newcastle are a little bit...
Yeah, man. They're boring. Awful.
Yeah. I mean, their numbers are god-awful. And when you watch them, I don't know. I mean, like, everyone's decided they love, like Alan Saint-Maximin, and I really like watching him, but I don't think he's that effective. I like Wilson. Wilson's a pretty reliable goal scorer. I still think he'll probably sit out a substantial portion of the season with an injury.
Yeah, Christ. If it happens to him, they're doomed, man.
Yeah, and when you look at... And their forward line, I'd say, is probably like one of their stronger areas, right? Because when you get into the midfield, I'm like, oh my God, like Matty and Sean Longstaff, like no disrespect to them, but those guys don't look like Premier League midfielders to me. Like, I worry about them. And I've always quite enjoyed a bit of Jonjo Shelvey, but again, I mean, it's not edifying stuff. So I look at their numbers. They're fourth bottom in Europe for shots. They're fourth bottom in Europe for shots against. I, at the same time, their results haven't been like particularly undeserved. Like, they've managed to like put in some decent performances in some important games. But I don't know. There's not a lot to like in that Newcastle side.
Yeah, he's a bit of an XG-defying manager, isn't he, Steve Bruce? He's just one of those managers that is happy to let opposition sides come right up to their box. And I don't know if there's been an evolution in the game, but... and just take shots from pretty close by, but because there's about eight bodies in the way, they tend to, well, not tend to, they can sometimes scrap through. But with him, it just feels like this current Newcastle operation just feels like holding on. I don't know where the progression is.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing I will say about Newcastle is that I feel like it's not going to be a 40-point safety margin this season. It might be 30. Seriously, ooh, that's how poor some of the teams are. Like, and they're already on 11 points. So,
yep,
as bad as they are and could potentially be, like, Sheffield United have got to claw back 10 points on them from this position already, which is a lot, given that we're already approaching a quarter of the season.
Yeah.
So, I just feel like they might survive because they've managed to scramble away to 11 points this early. And if that kind of continues and they get to 30 points, they will end up being safe just on that virtue. But I agree, they are a dull team and fully involved in this conversation.
Mm. Yeah, Jesus. Okay, well, shall we then pick our threes to go down? Chris, can you give me your order, ideally, 18th, 19th, 20th?
Oh, okay. 18th, 19th, 20th. I think Fulham 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Burnley 19th. West Brom 20th. Sheffield United to make the great escape.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, Joe, what have you got?
I've got West Brom rock bottom, for sure. Then I'm going to go... Fulham and Sheffield United.
Wowza. Oh my God. Okay, well, I'm going to go West Brom bottom as well. So I think that's unanimous. 19th. Oh God. Probably Fulham. I thought about putting them 18th, but I think they're going to go down. So I'll just put them 19th. And then 18th. I'm tempted to put Newcastle in, but I agree. Ooh. That a 10-point difference for a relegation level club is like
massive. Yeah.
The difference from the earth to the moon. So do I go Burnley or Sheffield? I'm going to go... Oh, God.
Find out on next week's Extra Time.
I might go Burnley. I think I'm going to go Burnley to go down, even though I think that Dyche has got a tremendous track record of sorting out the defence, yeah. And he probably will. I just look at them and I think, if this is the season that Barnes and Wood have realised how old they are, they're gone.
There's also like, there's bad juju, yeah. Man. Like, he's not happy in press conferences. The club feels a little bit directionless or rudderless, like in lieu of not sorting out the ownership stuff. Like, there is some bad blood, I think, there.
Yeah, the only reason that I've gone for Sheffield United to stay up above Burnley is is that Burnley's players that are injured have come back and Sheffield United's are out for the whole season. So yeah, like that, yeah. I think it's literally just that narrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it could really come down to what happens in the fixtures that they play against each other. But it could actually be an interesting race. And thankfully, the entire Premier League at the moment looks pretty exciting because almost nobody's competent. We are not going to do facts with Rafa Benitez today, though people have been asking for it in the comments. But we do intend to bring it back in the coming week. So thank you very much for demanding it. We will make sure that we find a way to get that back on the show because Chris has been WhatsApping me about it.
Relentlessly.
Guys, thank you very much for coming on the show today. What should people go and do after this, Chris?
Oh, worth go and watch our latest Explained. I don't know what that'll be at this point. Patrick is writing one for Euro Football Daily. I did one on why Jota should take Firmino's place. So just go and have a little rummage around on that playlist.
Spicy. Joe, what have you been up to?
Why not go and watch Winners and Losers, where we are breaking down the weekend's games and whether or not Chelsea could be legitimate title contenders with the form of Hakim Ziyech.
Ooh, that does sound interesting. Okay, thank you very much for being on the show today, guys. And thank you to you at home for watching or listening. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast through whichever podcast app you use or that you subscribe to Football Daily Podcasts on YouTube. Drop us a like if you've enjoyed this video and please hit us up with your suggestions for future episodes. We'd be delighted to hear them. Thanks very much and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.